Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jen Virginia, and my mute was on. Mercury retrograde has struck again. Yes, it's been one of those things. So I want to thank you very much for joining me on air. And tonight's guest is Guy Finley with a new book, The Courage to be Free, Discovering the Original Fearless Self. Guy Finley has an amazing career, starting with music, and now is one of the most foremost inspirational and motivative speakers and teachers out there. He has so many books, The Secret of Letting Go, The Essential Laws of Fearless Living, and the list goes on and on. He teaches at Omega He Institute. He has his own foundation in Oregon. Guy Finley, I thank you very much for honoring me yet again with your presence.
Well, Jennifer, don't be silly. You're more than welcome. Glad to be with you.
Well, I just have a great appreciation for you're a busy man, so you take a little time out for me, and I do appreciate it. This book is really a great book. You definitely have captured a very wonderful essence. You start this book out with just even the title. Where did that come from? What does it mean? The courage to be free.
I think that the reason that I chose that title is because for individuals who have been working along spiritual lines, wishing to be different kind of individual, we eventually realize that freedom is not as nearly as easy as people who want to sell us things make it out to be. And so the courage to be free alludes to what most of us are beginning to find out, which is that the thing that holds us captive isn't the relationship. It's not even the drug or the alcohol, or it's not the work conditions. It's really nothing outside of us at all, but rather there's a part of us that is clinging to these things. And so the reason we need the courage to be free, Jen, is because we have to let go of the part of us that is identified with whatever it's clinging to. The first thing that has to happen in one's spiritual life is this recognition that at any given moment, my experience of life is completely tied into what it is that I'm holding on to, what I value. And so when we can strip away some of the false things, you know, blaming, hating, resenting, feeling like a victim, when we can get rid of some of those terrible interrupting ideas, we come back to a very simple premise, and that is that there is something in us that becomes identified with someone or something, and that letting go, being free, begins with recognizing where this attachment has taken place, and then having the courage to let myself go, to die to myself, if you will, so that I might find a completely different and new order of my own life.
Now, that comes with a question I I'm actually been talking to a lot of people lately is people these days want the easy fix.
Yep.
They don't always want to take responsibility. Now, what do you suggest to people trying to kind of give people a clue on how to – you can't force anybody to take responsibility, but do you have any suggestions on how to make people realize what they're doing to themselves by not taking responsibility?
Well, you know, Jennifer, the short answer is no, because – you and I, our task on this earth is not to be concerned first and foremost with what other people are doing. Our task, as is mine right now while I'm talking to you, is to be as present to myself as I can be, as honest as that allows, and as receptive as I can be to what I learn through my honesty. And if I do that, if I'm truly responsible, then by the fact of that relationship with the present moment, I am fulfilling all that it's possible for me to be. I don't have time to think about what other people are doing. And I'm not measuring myself by how others are evaluating me, because none of that falls into the context of what is truly present, of what it means to be genuinely mindful.
So be very much the example, and it's possible that others will get the clue that way.
Well, you know, again, I'm not thinking about others that way, Jen.
Okay.
You know, when I write, when I speak, I'm not doing that so that somehow or other somebody's going to suddenly go, "Oh, I get it," and change. I do it.
Right.
Because I love to do it. I love the process of discovery. I love running into the rocks, into discovering the limitations. And when we will be that for ourselves, then if the expression of our life becomes meaningful or valuable, or even something that others might think that there's it's worthwhile to consider being like that, then they're doing what they do, and we're doing what we do, and we're not involved wrongly in other people's lives. We don't have an ambition or a motive to try and change other people. We want to change ourselves, and the only way we can do that is to be present to ourselves now. That's it.
Exactly. Wonderful. This book, how did this book come about? I mean, you have wonderful short stories in here. So the stories really point out how we have lost the right to be free. We
right.
kind of like gave our power over to other people
yep.
along the way.
Yep. Give it away.
So can you explain the idea a little further about that?
Oh, sure. Most of us spend our days. In fact, I was just, you know, I live in Southern Oregon, where I speak four times a week to a group of men and women, people who live here, and then people who come and visit. And I was just today working on an idea that connects with this question. Most of us, our days are spent kind of running, trying to get somewhere, trying to do something, to acquire some kind of security, some new power, so that we can feel safer or more secure. But if we examine our lives, which is what I urge everyone to do, not judge, but examine, we can see that our lives are running by. That the real meaning of our existence continues to somehow or other be put off into a tomorrow where we hope that some triumph is going to suddenly make us whole and complete. When I write any book, it's because I am personally spending my time as present as I can be to myself so so that I can find out where it is that there are parts of me that are promising one thing but are unable to deliver it, so that little by little one is so familiar with the parts of you that, with the parts of ourselves that promise something later, no matter what it is, that when those thoughts and feelings come with their promises, they're recognized as empty presence. They're seen as being powerless to do anything. And the surprise here is that eventually we realize that the task of here as a human being isn't to acquire power. Jen, you and I, however you want to say it, we are made in the image of God. That isn't some biblical reference. It's not a religious idea. It's a spiritual fact that we are created to actually realize the truth of it. And when we start to understand the truth of that, we realize, you know what? What a ridiculous thing to go looking for security, to go looking for love, to go spending my time hoping to acquire something by which I can feel important and special. There is no human being on the planet any more unique, any more special or powerful than you. And somehow the marvel of this Godhead, this beautiful life, is that that exists in all 6.5 billion of we individuals. And so the spiritual path, the awakening, is to the fact that there is nothing more than a man or woman needs to do than to be a conscious participant in the presence moment, in the presence of each moment. Because in that presence, if we bring ourselves into it, we are at once being acted on by the moment around us. You know, our conversation is acting on me, my voice is acting on you, our voices are acting on the listeners. So there's something acting on us that is working to reveal something in us that we weren't conscious of the moment of before. And when we can be aware of what we weren't conscious of the moment before because of that revelation, then the awareness of what we didn't know about ourselves, Jen, integrates us in a new way. And we become a new human being. And I mean it quite literally. A person who's genuinely present, mindful, is living in a world of creation. They are not trying to create things. They are creation itself. They are being refreshed, renewed. There is new discoveries. There's new limitations. And there's new releasing all at the same time. And that is what freedom is. There is no freedom apart from this present moment and all that it reveals and all that is released as a result of those revelations.
Very powerful. Very powerful information. I mean, it's truth. And it just, I'm just like in awe. It's just like, it really is one of the most powerful things you can do, is just be really present and conscious in that awareness. And you brought up a point that I definitely spend time doing and ask literally, okay, how am I out of integrity with myself? And figure out where those promises are and where I haven't been able to keep it with myself.
Yes.
I think that's a huge part of being really true to yourself, is if you can't be in integrity with yourself, how can you truly with anybody else?
That's right.
So something else I wanted to ask you with all that you said is, you said examine, not judge.
Right.
Can you explain how you can examine something without in some way slightly judging it?
Well, first of all, one of the things that we have to begin to discover early on, hopefully, is that whatever it is that you judge, Like, for instance, let's say we'll start with someone else. You hear somebody and you judge them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know why we judge them? Have you figured out yet, Jen, what the purpose of judging others is, why we do it, why it's so common?
Well,
and blaming, incidentally, all that, blaming, resenting,
All
that's a form of judgment.
Well, we don't want to take responsibility of it actually being us.
That's it. I judge. I should, more accurately, it isn't I that judges. This divided mind, this sleeping nature, it judges in order to hide from itself that it is the very character that it's in judgment of. It is the very character that it's in judgment of. All judgment is a form of, an unconscious form of resistance. When we meet someone and they have some quality and it sets us off, what sets us off is the fact that something in us immediately resists realizing that we are resonating in exactly the same way. There is a part of us that is in complete sync with whatever that unsavory quality is that we're judging. So the first thing that happens when we're around others is that mind, that level of mind, it registers the similarity. We're going to touch on something pretty deep here, Jen, so you keep me honest and don't let me get too far in the air here, okay?
Okay.
All forms of resistance to others is secret similarity. We resist in others what is similar in ourselves. Now, the way we can know this is true is using a kind of math. Are you musical at all, Jen?
I love music.
Well, you know, when you listen to a pianist or a symphony,
right,
one of the reasons that we love music is because we give our full awareness to it so that it will sound in us the same vibration that is being sounded by the performer.
Mm-hmm.
This is how a sitar works. It has sympathetic strings. So when the musician strikes a main string, it sets into motion by a kind of resonation with a vibration, it makes the other strings on the sitar start to hum.
Mm-hmm.
When we are around other people, everyone is vibrating, even if they're not saying anything. That's how when you can walk into a room, if you're sensitive at all, you can know the state of the person that's in the room or the general atmosphere of the room as made up by the individuals in it, because there's literally a note sounding. So when a person's in a particular state, anger, worry, fear, doubt, resentment, jealousy, that person is literally sounding out a certain kind of vibration. Now, first of all, they are resisting their own sound. They're trying to get away from it. And resistance is not separation, it's actually identification. So the more we resist something in ourselves, the more we judge something in ourselves that makes us feel uneasy that we don't want, it's actually a form of being more and more identified with it. The mindset is that when we resist something, we're somehow separating ourselves from it, isn't it?
Right.
Well, I'm saying that when you resist something, you're not separating yourself from it.
No.
You're showing where there's attachment and identification to the thing that you're resisting. Now, the reason this is important to know is because, in fact, there's an old philosopher, I think it was Fenelon, he said that a stone beneath the surface of the earth weighs as much as one on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these parts of us that hide from us these negative parts, these unconscious parts. And when events come along, they're actually coming and saying, Guy, Jen, can I introduce you to something that you don't know about yourself yet? Now, ordinarily, you would think a wise man or woman would say, well, of course. How could you possibly introduce me to something in myself that I shouldn't know about? Shouldn't I know all there is to know about myself? Right, Jen?
You would think so.
Yeah, I mean, really, listeners, think about this. Can there be anything about yourself that you shouldn't know?
Well, you know, I have to admit, as you're saying that, I can think of times when I've been in deep meditation and I'll hit something that just jerks me out. It's like, I'm not ready to know that yet.
It's not you that's not ready to know that, Jen. It's a part of you that doesn't want to be made conscious. It's a part that doesn't want to become conscious. Whatever awareness touches, just like light, whatever it touches changes what it touches. Whatever awareness touches, it changes. Now, awareness needs things to touch. That's the beautiful, seemingly dualistic, but it's not. The purpose of this dark energy, this unconscious nature, and our capacity as beings to bring light into ourselves, wherein that which was formerly in the dark is made aware of itself, and when it is made aware of itself, we as beings are more integrated as a result of that transformation.
Yes,
and therefore, it can only be good. You cannot find out anything bad about yourself. It's impossible. And I'll prove it. Can you think of any scenario, Jen, listeners, I'm asking you, can you think of any scenario in the universe where darkness isn't changed by light that comes into it?
Oh, I can't think of anything.
Now, if there is something in me and it doesn't want to be aware of itself, is that which doesn't want to be aware of itself, is it the light or is it the darkness that doesn't want to be aware of itself?
The darkness.
It's the darkness. And that's the only place that we are compromised. And in one respect, it's our only limitation. But it is a limitation by consent. Because once we recognize that if I'm willing to bring my attention into this present moment and be aware of myself, for instance, let's say I'm out to dinner with some friends, bring it down to earth. And suddenly somebody's talking about the fact that they just made some immense deal. They got a promotion. They won the prize. They're going on the all-expense paid trip to the somewhere in the who knows where they're going to live on a beautiful hut over the ocean, you know, with a canoe. I mean, I don't know what. And there you are, and you know in your heart of hearts you're jealous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can feel it. You also are thinking to yourself, you know, I should be happy for this person. And so what you do is, and we all do the best we can do, we pretend to be happy. Anytime we pretend anything, it is a lie. That's what pretense is. It's a lie. It isn't that we shouldn't be happy for others, but we should be conscious of the fact that there's something in us that isn't happy, that this other person's happy. It doesn't mean we can't express happiness. It doesn't mean we can't say, look, that's fantastic, I'm happy for you. But can I be all present to myself so that while I'm expressing my congratulations or my hopes, my faith that you'll come out on top, whatever it is, while I'm doing all that, can I be aware of this dark part of myself, not judging it, Jen, just for the fact of it,
mm-hmm.
Something in us resists everything. And then be aware of that part of myself so that not only does that person succeed, but I succeed in that same moment at becoming more conscious of myself and therefore less likely to be carried away by some regret, resentment, or blame because of what someone else has got.
Now, in that mix, with that said, where do false beliefs come into this mix? Because you talk about that in the book, that we really need to shatter those false beliefs. Is that one of those false beliefs that we can't, you know, say, you know, we're happy for them, but at the same time a little envious that they got that and I didn't?
Well, I mean, look, yes, of course. Here, a great big false belief of ours is that we are supposed to be all light. That's a great big false belief. That's the nightmare of mechanical religion. It is the root of fanaticism in whatever spiritual form. And it is the eventual destruction of any true aspirant. Because to be made in the image of God means that we are at once, you know, in the Old Testament, Genesis starts with, in the beginning, you know, God created heaven and earth, and darkness was upon, you know that business? The original, in the Aramaic, the original language, the word heaven doesn't correspond to a place. It has nothing whatsoever to do with a location. And the earth has nothing to do with a body. Or a location. Heaven and earth were referring to these two very unique archetypes of movement. One being of light that was expansive, and the other being of darkness that was contracting. So in the beginning were these great opposing forces that were secretly one thing. You getting me, Jen?
I'm getting you.
And we are that. We are this extraordinary body of these immense celestial creative forces, all of which are acting all the time and being acted on all the time. But we have been raised, conditioned, to believe that we're not supposed to have any of these contracting, dark, fiery forces in us. But they're necessary because they're part of this beautiful act of creation. We're also told today, especially in this psychopathic spiritual era, where everybody's talking about that you can manifest or create anything you want. Well, of course you can manifest and create things. But, I mean, think about it, listeners. If you're going to manifest and create something, how about just, why don't you manifest for yourself a life where you're happy with what you've got? Why is this idea of happiness only comes when I've got more of what didn't make me happy yesterday?
Yes, that idea of acceptance.
Well, what we're saying here is that we're loaded with these ideas.
Right.
And that these are various forms of false beliefs that when, for instance, I'm at that dinner table and I do feel the jealousy, I think, oh, I'm a terrible person for feeling this way. And so I crush that in myself. I deny in myself this part of myself. And then I try to act out. I pretend that I'm completely happy. So in that very moment, I am a ball of conflict, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, I've been there.
Yeah, I'm like trying to push a basketball underwater. Now, what we're saying is that those parts of us, that they're natural. That they're necessary. Because for one thing, how would I ever even be aware of myself in that moment as being what I am, if it weren't for the fact that something in me actually resisted what just took place? So we have this beautiful movement taking place at all times, where on one hand, life is acting on us to reveal to us certain limitations. That's another false belief. We're actually told that we should have no limitations. Well, no. To understand the only way to realize what is genuinely limitless is to understand that we must encounter limitation with the part of ourself that understands its role in creation. And then when we fully understand limitation's role in creation, then we're not bothered by it, we don't resist it, and it becomes a positive force. It becomes part of our liberation instead of more in-debt limitation.
Right. Well, it's almost like saying you can use the ego as a motivator, not just, you know, bash yourself because you have an ego.
Yes.
Because the ego does have its part. If you get angry because you don't like your situation and it motivates you to change in a more positive way, then that's not a bad thing.
Well, it, of course that depends.
If I'm
motivated to change by simply recreating a new idea or a new image of myself that momentarily feels good, but that keeps in place the nature that's always disturbed. Because look,
right.
here's a very important idea. Events don't create disturbance in us; they reveal the part of us whose tendency it is to be disturbed. See,
yes,
you go into some place and suddenly you're filled with discontentment, and you believe that it's the people or the place that's producing the discontentment. No, you should actually thank those people and that place for revealing to you that you entered into that moment with that discontentment. They just showed it to you. This is what Christ meant by love thine enemies.
Yes, really appreciate everything that's in your life because it's there for a reason.
Everything is there as it is,
mm-hmm,
for the purpose of revealing to you not only who you are, but who you have mistaken yourself to be, so that you can release the mistaken identity instead of allowing it to recreate itself and keep in place the pain that its existence is responsible for.
I'm just mailing that over because that really... Can you say that in a different way?
I'll sure try.
I mean, and it's just because it really is a concept that I think a lot of people need.
Let's try it this way, Jen.
Okay.
Try to bring it down a little bit so we can get our hands around it. One of the big false beliefs that we have as human beings is that we are only as successful as others agree we are. That our worth and value as an individual requires that others confirm it in order to be real. Now, we can all see that's true. We can have 10,000
mm-hmm
people say we're great and one person disagree or condemn us, and all 9,999 good for yous go out the window and we're fixed on the one unhappy thought, aren't we?
For the most part, people tend to do that, yes.
Yeah. So, now, with that in mind, can we understand that the purpose of our life can't possibly be to go around spending our hours, our life on this planet, trying to prove to ourselves or others that we are of value? Either we are created pricelessly, or we're going to spend our lives trying to get others to help us believe that we are something that we even have problems believing ourselves. Now, I'm working towards a particular thought here. Here it is. When life comes along and it challenges the ideas that we have of ourselves. We resist the moment. What we need to understand is that all of these moments that challenge us are literally emissaries of the divine. They're literally messengers. They are bringing to us a moment in which we can realize, by the fact that we're in pain and resisting what that person said, the sense of loss, by the fact that we're in pain and resisting the moment, Jennifer, we should be able to see that the part of us that is filled with that anger or anguish or blame or resentment, that that part of us no longer serves us. Now, maybe it was valuable right up until that time. You know, maybe I needed to walk around with that chip on my shoulder or the asserting self or trying to push my values and push my way through life. Maybe I had to do that because that was the best I knew to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, life comes along and suddenly we're aware of the fact that we are in conflict with what this moment is bringing to us. Now, in that moment where we are resisting what life has brought to us, we can do one of two things, and for a long time we'll always choose the wrong thing. We'll fight with that moment. We'll try to control the conditions that we say are causing us the pain. But gradually, we can begin to recognize that all the moment is really saying is, it's not saying that I can't go on. It's not saying that I can't achieve. It's saying that if I want to be a new human being, if I want to have a different purpose in my life, one that's connected with fulfilling the reason for my existence, then I need to let that moment act on me and help me, show me that it is time to let go of who I think I am, who I believed I was up until this moment. Here's an example. A woman lives with a man, and they get along just great for the first 3 or 4 years. But gradually, she begins to realize, you know what, he's always pushy. He's always trying to get his way. I didn't realize it before because I was so afraid of not having him. But now I'd like to have my own life a little bit, but there's no room. Now, up until the point where she realizes that this relationship is really kind of abusive and that she's been enabling this wrong part of him that's so domineering for fear of being alone, up until that point she couldn't do any better because she didn't have anything in her that revealed to her where she was compromising herself. But suddenly she's waking up. She's becoming conscious of this. And now she realizes, you know what? I can't go on as I have been. So I am going to have to say to this man, enough is enough. That's not how it's going to be. And I'm terrified of doing that because who I have been has depended upon this relationship. But I can no longer live like that. And she has to risk losing how she knew herself prior to that moment. You following me?
Oh, I went through that moment.
All right. Now, let's take that example and use it with our own thoughts and feelings, Jen.
Okay.
Here's a part of me that says, you know, you have to fawn in front of that person in order to get what you think is valuable. Here's a part of me, and it's saying, you've got to rush or you're going to lose out on something. And all of my life, I always did what these thoughts and feelings, that by the way are supposed to serve me, told me to do. So I wound up the servant of something that literally compromised me, whose gag I bought into because those negative states promise a payoff, that everything will stay relatively sane and secure. I won't be alone. I won't get in trouble. I won't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the grace of God, a person begins to realize, you know what? There's a lot of pain in this moment, and I used to blame it on the other person, or I used to blame it on this idea that, you know, I'm going to lose out if I don't answer to these negative states. But now I know very clearly, I can no longer be that man. I can no longer be that woman. And then, Jen, you sit there and you allow who and what you have been, which is this anxious, perhaps angry, frightened person, You allow it to be exactly what it has always been that you could never see before because you were identified with those parts of yourself. Now you're no longer identified. Now you see the truth of yourself instead of letting that false nature lie to you and get you to do its bidding. And you know what happens, Jen, when you can no longer allow these unconscious parts of yourself to run you ragged, when you become aware of them and you don't let them tell you what to do?
What?
They pass. They're transformed. They become literally, you know, a seed. This is Christian scripture. Unless a kernel of corn falls on the ground and abideth alone and dies there, it won't bear fruit. Have you ever heard that passage?
Yes.
Well, the seed, in this instance, of a kernel of corn, has something in it that the plant eats up. It literally absorbs all the nutrients in that seed so that it can have enough strength to break through the surface of the earth and then begin to use the sun's energy to grow. But first it grows on the food of itself until it can grow on higher food. It is exactly the same thing spiritually. When we discover there is this part of ourselves that corrupts us, that lies to us, that compromises us, and then one day we can just no longer be that, it's the same as bringing that part of ourselves into that light. We break through the ground of ourselves, and we stand in the light of something that can actually use what was using us to make us new.
Now, something that a lot of people say that's a great idea, but, you know, it's hard to let go of it sometimes. I mean, is it just that we're identifying with it still somewhere within us that we can't just let go?
That's it.
And understand that something better is coming in?
Yep, that's all it is. I mean, look. I'm trying to, and I don't think I'm doing a good job. I'm trying to keep it simple. But can you see, Jen, that let's say I want you to like me. Let's just say I want you to like me.
Okay.
Can I want you to like me without being afraid that you won't?
I don't think so.
No, it's impossible. Can I want anything without the fear that I won't get what I want?
No.
No. Want and not want are one thing. You can't want something without not wanting something else. It's impossible. This is a very deep idea.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to the very heart, incidentally, of you can't serve two masters, for you'll love one and despise the other. The two masters is actually desire. You can't want without not wanting. If I want to be wealthy, it means I don't want to be poor. If I want to be loved, it means I'm afraid I won't be.
Right.
If I want to be a success, it means I'm terrified of failure. Whatever we want, it brings with it its opposite. It's inescapable. Now, you ask me, is it just a question of being identified, why it's so hard to let go? The reason it's so hard to let go is because I believe that my well-being, who I am, depends upon something that I want. I'm conditioned that way. It's not even my want, if you want to know the truth. This belongs to a certain low level of consciousness. We're born into a certain consciousness where, without knowing why, we want to be successful. And we measure our success by achievement, accomplishment, possessions, and how much people approve of us. None of us came up with that idea. We were born into it. More accurately, it was born into us. So here I am, and I think to myself, I want. And when I want, I am identified. It's inescapable. But the fact that I'm identified, Jen, with what I want means I'm also identified with what I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So that when something comes along and I know I should let it go, the reason I can't is because I am identified. I am convinced that if I let this thing go, I will start experiencing what I don't want. So my mind projects a terrible outcome. It says, if I let go of this man, if I let go of this job that doesn't help me, that I hate, if I change my life, the minute the mind comes up with that, even though it's a right idea, maybe based on experience, maybe it's time, I've reached the point, but the moment the mind comes up with, boy, I should let this go, instantaneously comes into that same mind all of the negatives connected with the positive. And we don't understand that none of it is real. Neither the imagined positive outcome or the imagined negative outcome. That's all it is. It's just thought.
Yes.
Seeing the truth of that, Jen, allows an individual to act, to be present enough to realize that I mustn't, and this is going to sound confusing as all get out, I have to stop requiring my own consent to be free. I must act upon what I know is true, learn the lessons that come through the actions, and then start over again. Not, I have to think about this, make a half action, then worry about the result, and then make a new plan.
Very true. Not always easy to do.
Well, but no, see, Jen, I ask you, what's more difficult than running around in a circle to nowhere?
Very true. Very true. It's taking that leap of faith that, as they say, the truth will set you free.
Yes. And it's not even a leap of faith, Jen. It's saying, you know, if a bear walked into your room where you're on the radio with me right now, do you
mm-hmm.
need faith? Do you need faith to get out of the room?
No, I guess not.
I guess not.
No, I don't need faith. I would just
no, I
wait.
Don't. I,
no.
The fact of my situation produces action, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
If you were if suddenly the room caught fire, would you need to convince yourself that you should get out of the room?
No.
What happens when the heart is on fire? What happens when the mind has wild animals ravaging through it? Why wouldn't it be exactly the same thing, Jen, if I could actually be present enough to see, to know the truth of that? Would I have to think to myself, God, it's hard to let go?
No.
See, that's the beauty of intelligence. That's the beauty of this divine wisdom, of this presence. It doesn't require thought to act. You and I require thinking to act because we know ourselves through all the images that thought has constructed.
Right.
And we're identified with them. What we're talking about is a different order of being where a human being gradually, albeit, starts to realize how terribly limited and compromised they are whenever they allow their own mind to start extrapolating what's necessary and not for their safety, security, and freedom. Freedom is not a mental extrapolation. In fact, freedom has nothing whatsoever to do with any form of imagined security. Why? We just said so. Because whatever security I've imagined comes with the insecurity that's produced by being identified with those conditions. It's inescapable.
Yes, it is. And we have, believe it or not, I believe we only have about 5 minutes left. It always just goes so fast. And you do have a workshop coming up in 3 weeks?
Bless you for even mentioning it. I always forget, Jen. Yes, I'm going to be at the Omega Institute starting, I think it's September 19th or thereabouts. I'm going to be there for a week. And if you go to the Omega Institute, you know, omega.com, whatever their website is, or you can go to my website, which is guyfinley.org, G-U-Y-F-I-N-L-E-Y, and on the appearance page, all the details are there about the five-day workshop at the Omega Institute.
So what are the wonderful things you have coming up besides, are you going to be speaking anywhere else besides, of course, the foundation in Oregon? About this book, this class, do you have any other things, that wonderful things that you're working on?
I'm going to be making a small tour, Jen, but probably I'm going to keep it to the West Coast for now. I only try to go back east once a year. Omega kind of likes me to make my workshop the one big back east event.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Jen, but we have a brand new virtual online school called Guy Finley Now. It's called guyfinleynow.org. And literally, it is an online, it's just like being in Southern Oregon, except, you know, obviously you're not. But it's a wonderful site. It's a subscription site, but it's very inexpensive. And every talk that I give, blogs, forums, questions and answers, all kinds of things on Guy Finley Now. So any time I talk, it's virtually online 24 hours later at guyfinleynow.org. So that's something new. Of course, The Courage to Be Free, the new book. By the way, listeners, if you go to guyfinley.org and get the book through my foundation, you get a free DVD with the book. So that's something of note. And that's it. I mean, that's really, Jen, just working away.
And the book is wonderful. It's very inspiring, as all your work is. You can go to his website again, guyfinley.org, and sign up for his newsletter. They send out inspirational newsletters that really, they always just like, wow, that's really awesome. They really get you going in the morning, and I truly thank you so much for all the work you do and probing the mind into helping us find the truth and within ourselves, because you do a wonderful job, and you are always welcome on the show because you're always informative, insightful, and probing. You do go deep, and I have gotten comments from people. It's like, you know, some of his stuff went right over my head, and yet I know you've planted a seed, one of those wonderful seeds.
Yeah, and you know what, Jen? Everybody, listen. Forget me. Forget about Guy. Just follow what little part of you wants to know the truth of you. Just be as caring as you can for it. Give yourself to that thought. When it comes, that questions, when a doubt comes up about an anger or a fear, pay attention to the doubt, not to what the fear or anger wants you to pay attention to. Within every one of us, there is a divine intelligence that wants to be known, and it wants you to know yourself as it. And nothing can stop it from being born in you, meaning from you becoming conscious of it. All that's asked of any of us, to whatever degree we can do it, as often as we can, is to give ourselves over to the moment with a wish to be aware of ourselves more than we want to try to prove ourselves to others or to ourselves. If we do that, little by little, the rest is done for us.
And that's a wonderful way of ending this show. Guy Finley, I thank you again. And with that, with each breath, we hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Until next time, this is Jennifer Hellman saying good night and many blessings.